gone fishing. There's a sign upon your door.
Pops, don't blab it around, will you?
Gone fishing.
Keep it shady. I got me a big one staked out.
You ain't working anymore.
I don't have to work. I got me a piece of Gary.
Cows need milking in the barn.
I have the twins on that detail. They each take a side.
But you just don't give a darn.
Give them 4 bits of cow and hand lotion.
You just never seem to learn.
Man, you taught me.
You ain't got no ambition.
You're convincing.
Gone fishing. Got your hound dog by your side.
That's old Cindy Lou going with me.
Gone fishing. Fleas are biting at his hide.
Get away from me, boys. You're bothering me. Folks won't find us now because Mr. Satch and Mr. Cross, we gone fishing. Instead of just a wishing.
Bapa, baby, bapa, bapa, bapa.
Oh, yeah.
Good time to be out on the lake. We're going to talk fishing with our early bird fishing guide, Jeff Sundin, right now. Morning, Jeff.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us.
Indeed, no problem.
So we know how we're responding to the heat wave. How are the walleyes responding?
Well, they're doing kind of a happy dance when the wind is blowing. The warmer water temperatures really seem to have fired up the activity level. They're active and moving and hungry and feeding. The only problem is when the wind stops blowing, it seems like it's any kind of movement, and so you have one day of really good fishing, another day of kind of grinding away at it, alternating back and forth. I see today it looks like I'm on schedule for another grinding it day. The wind doesn't look like it's going to blow too much, but walleyes are kind of a migrating river current oriented kind of fish anyway, so that when you get a really good roll going on the water, that current that develops, it doesn't really, in some cases, it doesn't always have to dislodge bait or make things, easier for them to find or whatever. But just the simple idea that that water begins to move and they put their nose into the current and start to swim along. And as long as they're swimming along, they might as well feed when they stumble into food. And the darker conditions do make that a little bit easier for them. Mother Nature kind of builds in that sense of it's easier to feed when the bait fish and things like that don't know you're coming. So those darker conditions are an advantage for the walleyes. However they know it, it seems to play into the picture a little bit too. So overall, the fish are responding by their metabolism is going up. They're being more aggressive, but at the same time, they need a little bit more encouragement to move around and feed because the food options are increasing kind of daily for them right now.
So, Jeff, what's going on with the water temperatures? Are they crazy high?
They did get that way. I was seeing about 5 days ago or so, I was seeing water temperatures on Winnipegosh that were pushing the 80-degree mark. And that was one of those big, flat, like sunshine bait on it. And towards the end of the day, I believe when we were coming across Bowen Flats towards the end of the day, I saw a reading on my hunting bird of 79.7. And it was 5 o'clock or 5:30 in the afternoon. It's possible that it might have went across 80 that day. Then we got some wind and things have been mixed up a little bit more so that you can get a true feel for what the water is from the kind of the top to the bottom. And they're settling in right now somewhere between 72 and 74, depending on the lake that you go to. Still, no matter how you look at it, really warm for this time of the summer. And while I'm on the subject about that wind blowing, there's been enough of it on a couple of days. Some of the shallower water lakes, like Winnie, for example, around the shoreline edges, or take a lake like Round Lake, Bowstring Lake, Split Hand, you can make quite a long list of them. But these open large lakes that are exposed to the wind, this actually is turning the water over. You know, we hear a term turnover. There's like mini turnovers that occur multiple times throughout every summer. And so as this happens, you get like everything that's in the lake or everything that's in the shallow water of the lake kind of has an opportunity to go wherever they want and do whatever they want. The oxygen is the same and the water temperature is kind of the same. And so that in another way has, even though the fish are technically more aggressive and more active than they were before, they're now also more scattered. They're all across the flats, and so it's looking for, some cases, it's looking for a needle in a haystack compared to the schools of fish that were all gathered, you know, feeding on spawning minnows and things like that just a couple weeks ago. So a little bit more hunting and pecking going on out there to figure out where to catch a fish.
So earlier on, you mentioned that the wind affects the walleyes, but it does, sure doesn't sound like it affects the bass because they're in the shallow areas. And do you actually eat bass? And what the heck do they taste like?
Well, for the most part, you know, when I was growing up, the way we could tell if a fish was good or not is whether we caught one. Because anything that, especially fishing with my grandparents, anything that we caught went into one of those big round wire baskets. And I can remember my grandpa's famous last words were, "That's a mouthful." And boom, and it would go into that basket. And so we ate bass and we ate pike and what it, basically anything we had because they were fish. That automatically made them good. Now, last summer, I had a group that wanted to do something a little different. So we sort of did a busman's holiday. I booked a resort up on Cabotogama, and all of us, there was six people all together, and we went up there kind of as a group, and then we hired a guide up there. And so the guide was guiding the guide kind of a deal. And on that lake, if they catch a smallmouth bass, it goes in the basket. And they basically kept pretty much not, I wouldn't say not all of them, the larger ones, the really prime specimens all got let go. And, but then the smaller fish, let's say a 12-inch or a 13-inch smallmouth, would go into the live well, and they cleaned them all up there. And we had a couple of fish fries. I cooked those smallmouths along with the walleyes that we had, and they were really actually pretty good. And they were good to the point where I said, you know what, that sometimes Susan gets upset with me because we go fishing and I throw everything back because, you know, I do this for a living, and when I'm come home, I don't want to really clean fish if it's my day off or whatever. So anyhow, she's had a couple of smallmouths over the years, and I decided after cooking those up there, maybe we'll try it. We'll keep a couple of those. And so we had a couple here at home, and she liked them too. So as an option, if you're out there and catching a ton of fish, and they're all something other than a walleye, so kind of discourages you from wanting to bring fish home to eat, I would not discourage throwing a couple of fish in the basket once in a while, even if they are bass, or, you know, for that matter, if they're rock bass too. I have some customers that will keep every rock bass that we catch. 80% of the people I fish with turn their nose up at them and wouldn't even think about it, but the 20% who want them, they'll take as many as they can get. So part of that is psychological, and then, of course, the professional bass fishermen, the tournament guys, have sort of ingrained in everybody's head this ethic that if it's a bass, it should automatically be released that it's because it's a bass. But there are times, especially in certain lakes, where you can have so many of them that the same thing happens as it does with sunfish, where you just continuously have one after another of small bass, and the lake never seems to develop any larger ones. Well, in some of those cases, harvesting some of those smaller fish, even the largemouth as well, you know, probably does a little bit of good for the lake. You know, it forges a strong. So I would say catch one. If it's a really large one, that big bass is beneficial to the lake in other ways besides just being a big bass. They eat panfish, and they encourage the growth rates of larger panfish by helping you keep down the smaller size ones. So I definitely would let go of the big ones, but don't be afraid to keep it for the small ones.
You talked about going to Kabatogama and getting a guide, getting guided by someone else. I'm curious what it's like when you're headed to a lake you don't know much about to guide someone.
Yeah, well, this is interesting because once in a while, some of my customers, especially customers that have been fishing with me for a long time, and then somebody buys a cabin or they find a new resort on a lake that they really like and they want to try it out, and they kind of automatically assume that just because I fish every day for a living that all I have to do is show up at the lake and we're going to catch fish even if I've never fished it before. And I got one of those coming up tomorrow. We're going to be making a trip to it's a fairly large lake, not the biggest one in the world, but the approach that I take when I have never fished the water before is kind of simple. You know, look, even a rudimentary map, if you can find just a basic information that's on like a DNR map, for example, go to the Lake Finder website, look up your lake, and you click on the PDFs or whatever, and those maps are not highly detailed like what you would have on your Lake Master charts or something like that, but they give you a little starting point. So even if you don't have the fancy gear, the first thing I do is look for, you know, like there'll be several areas on the lake where you might have the deepest hole or the deepest water that's in each section. You know, some lakes are more complex, and there would be several places where you could consider that a section where there's a deep hole. Then you look after that, find the largest shallow water flats that you can pick out on that map, and, you know, kind of mark down, make yourself a couple of notes. The places where the large flat gets kind of close or is adjacent to those deeper water holes, then that gives you an educated guess about places that the larger the feeding area, that these big flats kind of represent the dinner table for fish in a lot of ways. And so a nice, big, wide, sprawling flat is a way better starting place than a real steep, skinny drop-off where, you know, the fish might have to travel, you know, along that drop-off for a period of time. But it's definitely not where they're going to feed. And lots of times anglers focus way too much on these real steep, you know, look at that drop-off right there. There must be fish laying all along the edge of it. And sometimes there are, but when they do, it's typically just short-term. So find the deep water first, then find the big flat. Now you've got at least some ideas to start. And then once you get the boat on the lake, kind of drive around those flats. And then the next thing I'm looking for is some sort of a structure that's on the flat, you know, whether it's a weed bed, if it's a pile of rocks or some sunken wood, whatever kind of thing that would create some hiding places for the fish. That's enough, gives you another clue about where to start, and that will change with lake by lake by lake. You'll have a dark water lake, for example. Maybe there's a weed line that's up in 6 or 7 feet of water, and from then on, there won't be weeds anymore. Or a clear lake may have weeds all the way out to 20 or 22 feet of water. So take your water clarity, take an educated guess. If you show up and it's really murky, go way shallower than you think you want to go and take a look at those shallow weed lines. And if they're hard to find and you can't come up with a weed line, then you go back and look for rocks or other kind of structure, and then start to poke around a little bit. If you do that for 3 or 4 hours, you're going to find something to catch. Now, it might not be the first try out, might not be the greatest fishing that you ever have, but take that approach, and it'll get you in the ballpark, and you'll be able to come up with something.
That is Jeff Sundin. You can read his fishing report at jeffsundin.com. Hey, stay cool, and thanks so much.
Okay, we'll see you next week.
Sounds great.